Hi, and welcome to another episode of CineNation. I am Brandon Sparks.
I'm Thomas Horton.
And I'm Hunter Barcroft.
Ben couldn't be with us today, because Ben's off dealing with some great family stuff.
Can we say it? Are we allowed to say it?
I don't know if we're allowed to say it or not.
Maybe we'll say it. We'll let Ben announce it.
We'll let Ben announce it. Ben's got great news, if he wants to announce it, if you're keeping up with CineNation on Twitter.
But also, I'm back.
Thomas is back. Thomas
with a vengeance.
Thomas is like, he's been gone for probably 4 months. Like, you did the Cinephile intro with me.
Partly.
But that's...
Yeah. I did the Cinephile. Partly out of
protest,
being
protest.
Busy, but also partly out of protest. But I'm getting back to the point where I feel like maybe not so much forgive, but just move past.
Hunter, do you know why he's protesting? Because I don't know.
If I remember correctly, it's because we talked about Daredevil with
Deadpool.
Adam. No.
Deadpool.
Yeah.
Thomas was so upset.
I understand though, Thomas. I feel
the next time a movie comes out that I've been hyped for like 7 years, if you guys do a podcast episode without warning me about it, you'll get another 4 months of me being gone.
We've kind of done it twice, too. We did it with Star Wars before Star Wars came out. We talked about Star Wars without you.
But you warned me. You warned me that I was missing the Stars episode. The thing with Deadpool was you guys were just like, oh, we're doing a new episode tonight. Not sure what we're going to talk about. And then I saw you right after you recorded it. And you were like, yeah, it was a really good talk. We talked about Deadpool.
I was like, dude, I thought we had agreed upon not talking about Deadpool.
We never agreed upon that.
I thought it was very well understood.
Never,
no Deadpool.
Never agreed upon Thanks, that. Honor. Never agreed.
Thanks, Honor.
I don't know. I'll dig it up in our group text.
Oh, yeah, please do. It'll take so many hours. I had to do that one time.
Oh, my God. No.
So, anyway. So, what have you guys been watching? Thomas, I'll let you go first.
Let's see. What have I been watching? Most recently, I went and saw Jungle Book 2 nights ago, Thursday night, when it came out. Awesome. I know I told you, Brandon, I really... And I think we'll get more into this, but, like, I want to be mad at Disney for just recycling, like, old scripts. Because, I mean, they really are. They're basic. For this and Cinderella now, they've been making a few little changes, but they're mostly just using the scripts from their animated films. But they do it really well. Like, Cinderella is beautifully shot, and Jungle Book is insanely technically impressive and incredibly well acted. I think it's one of the best voice casts I've ever seen in a movie. Just every single character perfectly cast. Looks great, really exciting, fun. Bill Murray, just I think one of his best roles in a while. He is just perfect in the film, and I think worth the 3D admission. I saw it in 3D. I read a couple of reviews that said to see it in 3D, and it's one I'm. The more and more I see 3D these days, when it's well done, I really appreciate what we've gotten to the point where nobody really, you know, throws things at you. It's just, I read an article about 3D, and it was talking about the window and how the screen is a window, and it would talk about films having things inside the window, which is like breaking the screen to come towards you, and then things within the window. And Jungle Book is like entirely within the window, and it's cool. Like it adds so much more depth to the film, and especially, you know, with this, which is just incredibly well done graphics, almost entirely, you know, computer generated. It looks so good. It looks incredible.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it because I saw the early or footage from it at D23 last August, and I was blown away by it. And I think Favreau talked about how they shot it three times. It's like they shot plates for it, they shot the kid, and they shot the stuff with like the motion capture for the animals. So it was like, it was so precise, and they worked every little thing out. And he was really big on having the technology push the story. Like it was a story that pushed the technology, not the other way around.
It's funny because on the way to the theater, Euthana was reading me the article. It was the same day that they had just announced all the Avatar stuff, and I had Avatar on my mind while I was watching the movie, and I was just thinking about the fact that at this point, if you go back and try and rewatch Avatar, it looks mm-hmm. it looks kind of bad. Mm-hmm. Like it's we're getting to the point where and it's crazy because I remember sitting in theater and thinking that was the most realistic thing I'd ever seen, you know, in my life. And now we're at the point where a lot of films kind of pass Avatar, mm-hmm. and the story just isn't there. Like, with Avatar, you know, and that's something that I think Jungle Book is extremely well done. And if we ever do hit a point, you know, where graphics go beyond this, which I'm sure we will, mm-hmm. but it'll probably take a while. I think mm-hmm. it is something that you can come back and still appreciate for the story.
Yeah. And then, Hunter, what have you been watching?
Let's see. So I went to the... I got a little bit of a story to tell, okay? So first off, I went to go see Midnight Special, and it was great. I loved it. It's a really good Jeff Nichols film that I don't know. I had a feeling that it was going to be bad, but then I was like really pleasantly surprised that it wasn't. It was kind of everything that I've ever wanted a sci-fi movie to be, and I was just kind of blown away. Mm-hmm. Man, shocking. Like, just kind of comes out of nowhere, and just it's just very... Like, the first 10 minutes of that movie are probably better than any 10-minute, like, opening of any movie I've ever seen. Hands down. It was awesome.
Really?
Man, it was great, man. There's just something about it, man. There's just something about that opening that just really grabs you, and you're just... You're completely... After that, you're just completely on board. And it's the weirdest thing... It's a very strange thing. Uh-huh. Like, the opening is very strange, but man, it works. I don't know why, but it just does. But, okay, so about my story that happened. So basically, we're at Star Wars. Back in December?
Yeah.
And this is the second time I saw it. So we're in line. No, it was Deadpool. So we're in line for Deadpool. And there's this guy in line in front of us, and he turns around, and we start talking to him. I don't think anything of it. And, you know, I just had this really good conversation with him, totally just a stranger off the street, talking about Deadpool, then, like, gone, never saw him again. Well, then I saw him in line one day, like, at Kroger or something, like, at the grocery store. And I was like, there's that guy from the thing. And, like, just randomly have seen him a couple times around town. So then we're across town at a different theater to go see Hardcore Henry mm-hmm. the other night. And this dude... I swear to you, he's in front of me in line. He turns around and he's like, oh my God. And I'm like, it's like a Twilight Zone episode. Like, I keep seeing this dude at every movie. And we just get into these great conversations about movies. Uh-huh. And we finally became Facebook friends. And man, he's moving to Austin to pursue like an indie film career. And he's a screenwriter. And I'm like, man, I wish him all the best. I don't know how in the world we ever became like buddies, but man. Every theater I go to, he's always the dude in front of me. It is the weirdest thing. But, yeah, so Martin, wherever you are right now, hope you're having a good time.
Yeah, maybe he'll be a listener now.
Maybe he's listening.
I'm going to send him this episode, man. I'm going to be like, here you go, dude. Here's my tribute to you and your oddly strange ability to be wherever I am. But, yeah, so I went and saw Hardcore Henry. Hardcore Henry was amazing. The story was not the best in the world.
Yeah.
It was definitely lacking in points. There was definitely like huge plot holes.
Yeah.
But, man, Sharlto Copley, mm-hmm. fantastic in that movie. That's like his best role since District 9, hands down.
It was so good in that movie.
The stuff that they managed to do.
What about A-Team?
Okay, he's good in A-Team, but man, there's something about this. Like, it's just so... Man, it's just so... It's so engrossing. I don't know. It's like, it's kind of the like how much they did, like physically did that were like realistic, like just practical stunts. I'm like,
yeah.
You people are crazy. People probably died. Like it's crazier than Mad Max Fury Road in that regard. And it's just mind blowing. The stuff that they've like pulled off.
Yeah. I
guess that's cause they shot it in Russia and like, there's just no rules, but damn, dude. Like,
yeah,
it is insane. It is absolutely insane.
It really was. And I know some people don't like it because it didn't get great reviews. It didn't do incredibly well at the box office. But I mean, I enjoyed it. Like, I agree with you, Hunter. It was like, it's not a great, not the perfect story in the world. But it was entertaining to me. And it didn't feel like it was just like going off this gimmick in a way. Does that make sense? Like, it was still, like, entertaining.
Yeah. I just don't know if I could subject myself to it. I don't even play video games. I don't like first person video games. Like I play Battlefront on third person mode. I don't know. It's just not my thing. So that, I mean, that, it just never really seemed like something I would want to watch just because I don't know. Yeah. Like the only first person full feature length movie I've watched is Russian Ark, and I like fell asleep during it, but that's a whole different story. There's no action sequences in Russian Ark.
Hunter, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say the only, like, the main dig that I have against that movie is, like, they never bother explaining why Julian Assange is telekinetic. Like,
oh,
the
yeah.
dude is, like, a clone of Julian Assange. And he, for some reason, in a world of, like, completely practical, like, kind of practical reality, this dude is just telekinetic, and, like, there's no explanation. And it's kind of ballsy, but at the same time, felt cheap.
It
felt gimmicky.
Because it's like, there's no really, it's not established in that world. It's like, I know you have this, like, they have a science thing with the guy from District 9, but his is
Shalto?
Magic.
Copley?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, his is magic, and Shalto's is science, and so that's why it's really weird to me.
It's the strangest thing.
Yeah.
Like, I appreciate the weirdness of it, but at the same time, it just kind of, at times I was just like, is this necessary for him to be telekinetic? It made no sense, but at the same time, whatever, it looked cool.
Basically, basically all I was doing was to give that guy like the upper hand on the Henry character. It's like to where it really makes it impossible for Henry to fight the guy because it's just like he could do one thing and like you're not coming anywhere near him. But anyway, I want to get back.
But
to
he could also talk. Rip. He could rip Henry apart.
Yeah, that's something that makes sense.
At his will. It's like, why do you really have to try to kill this dude when you could just, like, rip his body apart with your
mind? It's like the only way Henry can win is if he hits him with a shovel with his back turned and he doesn't know he's coming. That's the only way he can, like...
Hey, dude.
Spoiler.
That's
the end
not
of the
how
day.
It happens.
Just that's backwards, that's shovel. Backwards justice, Brandon.
I'm sorry. It's how I'm thinking. So let's get into the topic we're going to talk about tonight. And so recently... So we had Jungle Book come out this past week or this weekend as we're recording this, and we recently they just announced that David Lowry, who directed Ain't Them Body Saints, is going to be directing the new Peter Pan reboot through Disney. David Lowry has also directed Pete's Dragon, which hasn't even came out yet, and we wanted to talk about how studios. It's becoming kind of a trend recently. It's been doing it for the past few years, is that studios are taking kind of these independent filmmakers, these new unique voices, and putting them fairly early on in their careers into a big studio film. Like, it's becoming, if you look at most studio film, not most, if you look at a lot of the franchise films, I mean, would you guys say that majority of them are all like second or third time filmmakers? Like, that's kind of happening a lot.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely something, like, Marvel has adopted as they've gone along. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, if you look at Marvel at the
beginning. Yeah, they weren't doing that.
Like, Favreau and Kenneth Branagh aren't really a gamble, but then they kind of started.
Well, even Joe Johnston for Captain America.
Yeah. Like, but then as you go along, I mean, you've got the franchise established, it's a gamble, but it's also something that is kind of like win-win for them. Not necessarily win-win so much, it's just like win/don't lose as much, because you just, because there's someone you can point to. If it goes badly. Yeah.
There's always a Josh Trank.
Yeah, exactly. I told Brandon in a conversation recently, I want to establish this in film industry speak. is to just, when a studio completely throws a filmmaker under the bus, we're just calling tranking them.
You just got tranked.
Yeah, yeah. Oh man, that guy got tranked so hard. Yeah, because that's all Fox had to do was blame Josh Trank for Fantastic Four, and they were able to keep going without anyone. You know, no one has since gone like, oh man, I wonder if, you know, Fox shouldn't, you know, should stay away from superhero movies because, wow, Fantastic Four was a train wreck. And no, nobody says that because they put all the blame on Josh Trank.
And also because this, it's like all these trailers dropped for X-Men Apocalypse, and that movie looks amazing. So people will soon forget Josh Trank exists. Sorry, Josh Trank.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, also, you know, who was able to like skate away from Fantastic Four unscathed was Simon Kinberg, yeah, who helped write it and produce it. And now, you know, he's on Deadpool, he's on X-Men, and nobody brings up like, oh, from the guy who brought you Fantastic Four is X-Men Apocalypse.
I guarantee you, you'll never see that advertising line in any film.
And he's a guy who, like, he not just produced Fantastic Four, he wrote it, and he hasn't written many scripts. And it's like you're saying, it's, he kind of like, no one questioned him. It's like he was the guy, like.
Because, I mean, there was absolutely no doubt a meeting at Fox when the reviews started coming in, or even before, you know, that somebody said, you know, what are we going to do with this movie? Someone said, we got, you know, we are way too heavily invested in Simon Kinberg to let this reflect badly on him. You know who we're not heavily invested in? Josh Trank. Get rid of him. You know, he'd only done, what, one? Was Chronicle his only film? Chronicle's his only film. Yeah. You know, he's only done one movie, like, and so, you know, the BFG tanks, Disney can't really turn around and, like, point a finger at Steven Spielberg, you know?
Yeah, but, like, I wish Warner Brothers would just adopt this mentality of throwing the filmmaker under the bus, because I just, like, dear God, I would rather watch a Josh Trank, like, Justice League movie than I would Zack Snyder. I will say it here. I believe it would be better.
Did you see Fantastic Four?
No.
Like, Fantastic Four was bad. Like,
I took your word for it, and I didn't go.
It was bad. And granted, I can't tell you which is worse, like Fantastic Four or Batman vs. Superman, because Fantastic Four, nothing really happened. That was its big flaw to me, was like there was just nothing really happened in the movie. And Batman vs. Superman, it was just incoherent, the stuff that was happening. It just made no sense, usually. And I don't know what would be worse. I really don't. Fantastic Four was pretty bad. Fantastic Four was one of the most painful films I had to sit through in theaters. And Batman vs. Superman was the film that made me the angriest, probably. Because it has such a good, like, property with Batman vs. Superman that they just, I think they wasted it. And going off of what you guys are, what Thomas was saying, or anyway, what you were saying, Hunter, is that with Batman vs. Superman, for example, he is an established figure. And it's hard to get rid of that established filmmaker when you've invested so much time into him and so much money into the person.
Yeah, that, you know, it was a really interesting, that weekend that movie came out, I was very interested to see what would happen that Monday. Because I'm sure there were a lot of meetings at Warner Brothers the weekend that the reviews for Batman and Superman were coming in. And I was waiting to see, like, what were they going to do? Were they going to, you know, blame Zack Snyder? It's harder to do, but you can't. I mean, it can be done. Were they going to, you know, kind of slowly start bowing out some of their
projects? They doubled down. And no, they just doubled down.
Yeah, they just went for everything. They were like, oh, nope.
It's throw weird more money at it. It's not even a marketable movie to, like, kids. Like, you can't even sell merchandise off these things. It's about two heroes duking it out with each other. And, like, who wants to buy a toy of like, two heroes that just want to, like, kill each other? Like, that's bleak. That's, like, one step away from a Cormac McCarthy novel. Like, my God, you can't sell Blood Meridian toys. Like, no one wants to play with those. Like, it just makes no sense to me at any point, in any level. I liked Ben Affleck, and I liked Wonder Woman, and, like,
same.
You know what? I liked Henry Cavill. I thought Henry Cavill was miles ahead of where I thought it would be. I actually like him as Superman. I don't think Zack Snyder, like, really understands Superman at all. Because I know I'm just going on a rant here, guys, but it's okay. Man.
Go ahead.
Okay, so I was listening to this other podcast, Slash Film Podcast, and, like, they nailed it on the head. Like, Zack Snyder has no idea. Like, he doesn't like Superman. Obviously, if you saw Batman vs. Superman and you think that Zack Snyder loves Superman, you're wrong, because he hates him. The whole movie is, like, continually shitting on Superman until Superman. I mean, like, that's just how it is. You know what, Brandon? I don't care. You're mad that I'm spoiling this movie, but people need to know. They need to have a spoiler for them so they don't go spend money on it, and Zack Snyder wins in the end. I'm doing them a favor. I'm doing the world a favor. I'm the hero CineNation needs right now, Brandon. And the one they deserve. Oh, man. So,
I'll bleep it out, and then they'll never know.
Just a long bleep. Hunter goes on a rant, and then it just bleeps.
Just bleep the part out where Hunter goes, bleep. You know, that part.
Dude, I just can't. I'm still mad about it. Angry.
Because, you know, that's the thing. I was mad, too. They don't utilize Superman in any way. Is that they're going off the whole he's an alien concept.
Dude, it's Donald Trump's take on the world, dude. It is literally like Superman is the ideology of the immigrant story. This dude doesn't have a home, comes to America, finds something to believe in, finds something to love, fights for that thing, and then ultimately sacrifices himself for it. In this story, Superman comes here, his parents are like, you don't know these people anything. You don't have to really save them. And then he's just kind of like, you know what? I don't have to save them, but I want to save my parents, so I guess I'll do this right now. It just, like, my God. The opposite of what Superman is. It just makes no sense to me. It is mind-boggling, dude.
Why the Donner version, and we'll get back to what we're supposed to be talking about, but why the Donner version worked to me was because it tried to humanize Superman. Because it's about Superman dealing with the fact that he's different from everyone and he wants to be human. Like, if you watch in the Superman 2 with the whole, like, he actually becomes human.
Yeah.
And he has to deal with the fact, like, oh no, like, I can't do what I originally did. And he's trying to find his place in the world. And it focuses on the human side of it.
Mm-hmm.
This Superman focuses on the alien side of it, if that makes sense. It's like, it's all about him being an alien. And it's just like nothing. It's just every time we cut back to him, his story is boring to me. It's like we cut away from Ben Affleck as Batman, which I think is some of the strongest moments of the film are when it's on Ben Affleck, and we cut away and it's uninteresting. And the way they like for example, the way they use Jimmy Olsen in the one scene he's in.
Oh yeah, dude, that is just heartbreaking.
I will spoil that. I will spoil that for you because it's so stupid, and it's like they don't even give it the stuff it like the weight that it needs. Is they when you first see Jimmy Olsen get shot in the head, that's what happens. It's the first scene in the movie. It's just like, oh, okay, that's that.
Well, this is a sentence I've always wanted to say on this podcast, but now that we've talked about what the DC Cinematic Universe is doing, that's not working. Let's talk about how Marvel is doing the cinematic universe right.
I agree, dude. 100%. I've been reading the early reviews for Cap 3. Looks good.
Yeah, yeah. Early reviews for Cap 3, you know, coming back great. The Russo brothers. Like, go back, take me back 5 years and tell me that these sitcom directors are going to be directing one of the biggest superhero movies ever. And getting great reviews for it. And that's what Marvel's making really interesting choices. Mm-hmm. But also I you know, they're the indie unestablished director thing has worked for them. It's really paid off so far.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at it, you these guys, they did TV, but before that the two features they did were Welcome to Collinwood and You, Me and Dupree. They follow up You, Me, and Dupree with Captain America, the Winter Soldier.
Well, and when Marvel picked them up for the Winter Soldier, they were kind of at a low point. Happy Endings, which they were directors and executive producers on, had just gotten canceled. And they had just gotten through the Dan Harmon-less season of Community, which they were the sole runners of and got so much flack for just like running Community into the ground while Dan Harmon was gone. So like, I don't know who at Marvel looked at these two guys and said like, let's give them a dark, you know, spy thriller Captain America movie, but it was a great call.
They really didn't.
That's true.
And I feel like when you have a filmmaker that has something to prove, that it shows in their work when they really put a lot into it and they really care. Because as we have all seen now, you can see a movie with superheroes where people obviously don't care at all. And I think it really makes a difference. In a movie where you don't really think that, like, you know, you have all these things, it should just work. Like, you really do, you have a heart and soul in the movie, and I feel like it shows with some of these directors that haven't had this grand stage to tell a story on before, and they're given this, like, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and I feel like they're making the most of it for the most part, and it's really enjoyable to watch.
Well, and I think one of the best payoffs on a big chance that Marvel took was taking James Gunn, someone who, an indie... I mean, you can't. The Scooby Doo movies aren't really indie, but they aren't great either. He did the
Dude,
two.
Are you kidding me? I love Scooby-Doo the first movies. One.
But, I mean, other than that, he'd done Slither and he had done Super, which is a scathing, like, takedown of the superhero genre. Really, really good dark satire. And they gave him Guardians of the Galaxy, which I still think is my favorite film in the Marvel Universe. So well done. But partially because it has that tongue-in-cheek, like, making fun of the superhero genre quality to it.
It works for that.
Well, it's like, the thing I would go, when it comes to them taking a chance on a director, I mean, you'd have to point out Joss Whedon. And the reason being is because, yes, he had done TV for a while, but before he directed Avengers, he had directed only one movie, and that's Serenity. And that was, like, their first kind of... I won't say it was a risk to some extent. It wasn't a risk of like, I think no matter what it is, people are going to show up, but they're risking it on a second time filmmaker essentially to direct this movie, a huge big budget film. And then every time after that, you have Shane Black, who also had been writing for a while, but he'd only directed one movie previously, and that was Kiss
Kiss,
Bang
Bang. Nice Guys is going to be amazing. Shane Black's going to be doing huge stuff.
Silver Pictures is going to be putting out some great stuff in the future.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and then you have James Gunn, you have the Russo brothers, you have Peyton Reed for Ant-Man, and he had just been doing like his biggest thing was probably Bring It On, which is like that's
I loved Ant-Man too.
Like,
he did
Bring
Ball.
It On, Down with like, Love, The Breakup, and Yes Man. Yeah, it's like, and then you have these other people. I mean, like, for example, one of Thomas's
Taika Waititi. What an interesting. I love Taika Waititi. I've sung my praises for What We Do in the Shadows in this podcast before. Taika Waititi is an incredible director, but all offbeat New Zealand small budget comedies. So let's give him. Thor 3.
Dude, I think Thor as the character, like, and especially Chris Hemsworth, his brightest moments are when there's like a subtle joke. He has like really good timing, and I think like that's a match made in heaven. They can make a hilarious Thor Ragnarok, and as weird as that sounds, it could really work.
So I want to ask this is because you have Marvel who's kind of taking some risk on these independent in a way, or almost unique, I guess, lesser known directors is a better way, because not all of them are like first time directors, but lesser known directors. But then you have Disney, which I know they're the same thing, but Disney with some of their movies like Jungle Book and like even Alice in Wonderland and Cinderella, they're taking a established director and putting them in the director spot for their big film.
I think they're the same thing, and I'm gonna. Here's my reason.
Which
why.
One do you think is better?
If that makes sense. Marvel is owned by Disney. Okay, you start off Marvel Cinematic Universe. You have these big directors come in and make these big movies. All right, so then they start handing them off to these kind of no-name guys. People haven't really, you know, done much to proving themselves. So they come in, and they slowly transition out these guys who have been directing. You know, like, Favreau's been around. He's done a lot. And now he's starting to direct these live-action Disney movies, and I feel like that will happen for a little bit, and it'll be really popular, and it'll be really awesome, and then they're going to start moving in the same direction with those, because they're going to hit their big properties first. They're going to hit their big properties first, and then they're going to go into this.
They are, yeah.
Kind of like the more obscure stuff, kind of like when Marvel hit, like, Guardians of the Galaxy. I feel like that's the first, like, offshoot that we had. Where it wasn't like a mainstream, like, oh, everyone knows who these people are. I had no idea who they were. I'll be the first person to admit it. But you know what? Now I do, and I love it. So I feel like there's... Yeah. It's just a pattern that I feel like will keep cycling.
Absolutely, because, I mean, they did the exact same thing, are doing the exact same thing for the Star Wars universe. J.J. Abrams. And then, I mean, you can't call Rian Johnson, like, a huge... star. Most people wouldn't know who Rian Johnson is.
No, he's not.
Gareth Edwards.
Mm-hmm.
Edwards. Yeah, you know, and then Colin Trevorrow, which is I still wouldn't call a household name. I mean, they took a chance on him for Jurassic World, and Jurassic I mean, obviously World. That paid off. But he was coming to Jurassic World as a nobody. But yeah, I mean, it's a system that Disney seems to have perfected, is, you know, bring in somebody big, get the big names in there, and then I think the key is finding unique voices. You know, find someone with a unique voice that can bring something new, hip, interesting to this genre, which is why, you know, I don't think... Having Zack Snyder run the DC universe is a good idea.
Yeah, when they didn't want George Miller, like I'm just so confused, and I don't even get me started on this again, Brandon, because it's just gonna be bad.
Well, the Han Solo movie, they're going with Lord and Miller, you know, those guys. Did 21
Jump Street and Lego Movie, Chance of Meatballs. But it's like
and a bunch of they did a bunch of Lego writing movie, for How I Met Your Mother. Yeah. That's how I first heard of them.
It's not just Disney. I mean, if you look at with Gareth Edwards, I mean that guy does Monsters, which is like less than a $500,000 movie, which mainly focuses on just really two actors with other like supporting roles, and then the dude gets Godzilla, which is, he goes from a less than $500,000 movie production budget to a movie that costs $160 million to produce. Like, that's a huge jump for a person. And now he's doing Rogue One is his next film. It's just, and like I said, with Rian Johnson, he goes from Looper to Episode 8. And it's another guy is Matt Reeves. Is that Matt Reeves comes from, like, his first film was Cloverfield. And then Let Me In. And then his next thing is Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. And then he's doing the next Planet of the Apes movies. And he's doing the Planet of the Apes series. And so that's one thing, because I want to bring this up too, is with Cloverfield, especially 10 Cloverfield Lane, like, maybe that's a way to even bring more young, unique voices into the studio fold, is by giving them a smaller film like, say, 10 Cloverfield Lane, and just setting them up for, like, a bigger film later on.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that's also... With 10 Cloverfield Lane, you bring up a great point, is that's been kind of J.J. Abrams' school of thought for a long time. With Bad Robot, Bad Robot has always kind of functioned on that idea that, like, if you come into Bad Robot and you pay your dues and you have good ideas and you have good vision, like, J.J. will support you at some point. And I mean, that for a long time, I think that was a part about... that was a big part of the Hollywood system, and I think it's kind of starting to come back because in the 90s you were an indie director, and you stayed an indie director, and you know, everybody wants some is great, but You know, like we.
But you can make movies about nostalgia X amount of times before people just kind of get over it and they don't care anymore.
Well, yeah. Well, I'm not implying in any way that Rick Linklater like wants to do a superhero movie, but I do think it's interesting. We went through a long period of time where franchise films went to established directors, and I guess what I'm saying is it's interesting now that we're at this point where people are interested in bringing in new undeveloped voices to do these franchise films.
Dude, Richard Linklater would be great for Smallville because we could just see every year Superman's life until he became Superman. Superboyhood. You know what's interesting though, and like I have been digging around and I'm thinking about like you know all these Marvel directors. We haven't even talked about the most interesting one yet, Scott Derrickson, the guy that's directing Doctor Strange. Okay, this dude directed Urban Legends, The Exorcism of Emily Rose, Sinister, Devil's Knot, and a Hellraiser Inferno. Now he's directing Doctor Strange. Like, where do you find these people, Marvel? Like, I can't wait for this. I really, and it makes no sense, but I love it.
It's interesting. Like, you can kind of see their thinking when they pick these people. Like with James Gunn, you know, they were thinking, we want to make, Guardians of the Galaxy is weird. Let's find somebody who can make, like, a superhero movie with a weird sense of humor. Doctor Strange, from everything I've heard, they want to make it dark, they want to make it trippy, they want to make it supernatural. Let's find someone who is not necessarily making great horror movies, but who has an interesting vision that, you know, within that genre. Yeah. I mean, they did the same thing with Thor 2. Had more of a kind of like big battles. You know, we spent most of our time in Asgard, which is kind of medieval. Mm-hmm. Let's pick up two of Game of Thrones' favorite directors, and that's what they did. Like those, they picked up two directors who do a lot of Game of Thrones. So I mean, there's an obvious logic to it, and I think that's why it can work, because the new trailer for Doctor Strange looks
like Inception
amazing.
Meets like. Captain America, the Winter Soldier, meets Dazed and Confused. It's very strange.
Where did Dazed and Confused?
It's
come
just.
From?
Have you seen the look on his face the whole time? It's like this angry confusion, and I don't know, man. That's kind of my face when I watch Boyhood. But wow. I mean, man. You know what? I'm excited. Doctor Strange. I didn't ever think I would be into it, but. I'm already into it, and you know what? Like, whatever. I'm 100% on board the Marvel train at this point.
And
like, let's keep going, guys.
We gotta bring up Ryan Coogler, who is doing Black Panther.
Man.
Yeah, man.
Goes from Fruitvale to Creed, which you could argue is another franchise reboot in a way, and then he gets Black Panther. I mean,
man.
After
Ava passed on it, who's now doing A Wrinkle in Time through Disney, I think.
Yeah.
Is it A Wrinkle in Time? Yeah.
She is such a beast. Like, what a force to be reckoned with. Like, man.
And that's another point, too, because Ava passed on it, and the reason why was because of creative differences, is what was said.
Well, my understanding is that, from what I've picked up, Ava passed on it the same reason Edgar Wright dropped out of Ant-Man, which is, when you're doing this, and I mean, this goes hand in hand with the fact that we keep saying they're taking a gamble on these directors, you have to deal with a lot of studio oversight. Probably more than, I mean, obviously more than a lot of these indie directors are used to, but probably more than a lot of studio film directors are going to get, because... It is a gamble. You know, they've made an investment in you. And you know, Marvel has, at this point, established...
A level of trust?
Like, a sense
of... It's a level of trust.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And it's like quality control, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't love McDonald's, but when I'm on a road trip, when I'm on a cross-country road trip, I would much rather go to a McDonald's than some, like, shady-looking shack in some on the side of the interstate in the middle of nowhere, because I know... that somewhere out there is kind of making sure, like, the people in this McDonald's aren't going to, like, kill me.
That's true. Unless you go to the McDonald's in Northport, Alabama. Oh, man.
God.
I'll let Grant explain that one at some point. But,
okay.
Yeah. I feel like you're definitely not a Burger King guy, Thomas. Is that what you're saying? Is that why you didn't like Man of Steel?
I'm just... No, I'm just saying you get this sense of, like, eventually the brand starts to mean something when that... You know, I showed my roommates the Doctor Strange trailer the other day, and when that red Marvel logo pops up, you're like, oh, it's a superhero movie, but, you know, maybe it might be fun. It might be different, because that's what Marvel has kind of turned their brand into. And DC is trying to turn their brand into, like, bleak and dark and boring
and
as shit.
Marvel's slowly getting darker, but they're doing it in a way where their movies still have a heart in the middle, and, like, you can still market that to pretty much everyone. In DC, like, there's no heart in that movie.
I mean,
like, Wonder Woman might have, like, that might be their best hope at this point. Yeah. That movie looks amazing. I know nothing about it. I've seen no trailer. All I have seen is, like, the 10 minutes that she's in Batman Superman, and she's great. So, I'm in.
Well, the thing about, say, Batman vs. Superman, I mean, there's, like, three funny moments, and that's like, being generous.
Yeah, that is being generous.
That's three funny moments. And the funny moments are, like, not because it's supposed to be funny. It's just something so stupid that you just have to laugh. But yeah, it's that's what Marvel has, is that it doesn't take itself too seriously.
You can never take yourself too seriously
in a superhero movie. It's a comic book.
I mean, I don't say you can't. Obviously, DC is. You should never take yourself too seriously because you are you're a superhero movie. Nolan pulled it off precisely because he made nobody super.
It was a bunch of ordinary people with one guy that had ordinary powers but just happened to have extraordinary money.
Mm-hmm. But even then, Nolan still had some quick moments of humor. Like,
right. But he also, Nolan had a rule that no one, and he took, I mean, Nolan, if you read Batman comic books, like, Christopher Nolan changed them so much. Because all the villains in Batman have something supernatural going on around them. Yeah. And Nolan took all the supernatural stuff and he made it logical. Yeah. And that was his rule. And he always said that, like, nothing supernatural would function in the Nolanverse. Yeah. And we all believed him, but for some reason DC didn't believe him, and they tried to build this new Justice League inside something kind of like the Nolanverse, and it just doesn't work. You can't have Superman inside the Nolanverse.
So anyway, it's interesting to me, because I brought up earlier, I'm switching topics here, is... How Disney is there with David Lowry for Pete's Dragon. We haven't even seen Pete's Dragon yet, and they're giving this guy another Disney live action movie, which I find very interesting. Like, they must have a lot of faith in this director for...
Yeah, kind of like how they greenlit Justice League before Batman vs. Superman came out.
Or how they greenlit Fantastic Four 2 before Fantastic Four ever came out.
I mean, it's at this point, it's just you know.
Yeah, but...
Pete's Dragon's gonna make money, whether it's bad or not. Yeah. And Disney is on board with the live-action classic animation train right now. They're just going for it. Hopefully it'll be better than what Warner Brothers is doing, but they're on the exact same business plan that Warner Brothers is. You know, keep throwing money at it, and you know, it's not necessarily. Hopefully, this means that they've watched the early cuts of Pete's Dragon and they really like it, but that's not necessarily true.
Dude, I watched that movie only for Robert Redford. Just being honest with you.
Yeah.
Like,
I know you would.
What a good... That's got a good cast. And I've seen the picture that they just released of the hairy dragon. But, like, you know what? Normally, I would not go to that movie. But I'm going to go. I'm going to spend money on it.
And so I'm going to ask you this. Do you feel that what they're... It's kind of a two-part question. Do you feel that what studios are doing by giving independent filmmakers a chance to do a film beneficial to the industry?
Yes.
But do you also think it's harmful to the independent market?
No. Here's why. You're letting these people create a, like something worthwhile and meaningful, uh-huh. something great. When in a world where you almost can't make these, like, you can't be an unknown and make a ton of like really small films. It's really hard to do that and become like the next Steven Spielberg. They're giving these people the opportunity to mm-hmm. really make a name for themselves, to where they can come back with a smaller film and they can really make something special that a lot of people will see. Like, a lot more people will see whatever, what's his name, that did Jurassic World, like Trevorrow. Oh, a lot of people are going to see Trevorrow's work now only because of Jurassic World. If he had mm-hmm. never had that, yeah, he would still be seeing, like, a lot of, like, the Duplass Brothers fans would still be watching his stuff. But other than that, like, you know, it would take him a lot longer to get to the point where he is now. And now mm-hmm. he can make these movies and people will see them. And, you know, I feel like that helps. It's almost, I feel like it's going to balance out a lot of things in a world full of tentpoles.
Well, I totally agree with Hunter. I think ever since, like, late 80s, early 90s, the rise of the Weinsteins, like, we have, within the industry, the independent film is the way that you become a director. You make a couple good indies, maybe people start giving you money. But I think this is really, it feels like the first time that we've been at a point where, you know, you make a one or two really good films, and then people throw you, like, a franchise blockbuster, because, to be quite honest, everyone who wants to be a director right now is trying to make it through indie films. Pretty much everyone. There's no such thing anymore as, like, get a job on a set and, like, work your way up to directing a feature. Like, that just doesn't really happen anymore. But not everybody who's working their way up through independent films is, like, suited for Sundance. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I love Sundance, I love independent films, and like I said with Richard Linklater, you know, maybe he's doing what he loves and what he wants mm-hmm. to do for his whole career. But, you know, some people are more suited for blockbusters. Yep. Like, you know, who knows if that Kevin Smith Superman movie would have worked out in the 90s. Like, maybe Kevin Smith would be a franchise, like, action director these days. Like, I know he'd love to do that.
At least a writer.
So I think it's giving opportunities to those indie directors who wouldn't, who want to do films like this and wouldn't necessarily get the chance to.
Yeah, I mean, I think Gareth Edwards is a big example, is that Monsters doesn't play like a indie, like, less than $500,000 movie. It plays like just the beginnings of a blockbuster director. Like, it plays like, mm-hmm. it doesn't play like an indie film.
And Chronicle's the same way. Josh just kind of blew it.
Or did he? But that is a valid point. And not all directors are suited for blockbuster films, and not all directors are suited for indie films. But then you have some people, it's not franchises, but even Jon Favreau is a good example, is that he does something like Iron Man and Iron Man 2, and then even Cowboys and Aliens, and then he follows it up with Chef.
And self-funded,
small movie, he gets his star friends to be in it, he's acting in it. So he's kind of a good example of someone who can kind of go back and forth. Mm-hmm. And then you have some, like Steven Soderbergh, who did it for a bit where it wasn't a studio, it was a studio film, but not a huge, like, blockbuster, is that he does, like, the Ocean's 11 series that we talked about today, Thomas. And even Linklater with doing School of Rock.
Well, I think Soderbergh and Favreau are the ones I'm trying to... Like, I'm thinking of, like I was saying with Sundance, is we've come up with this idea, like, we pigeonhole directors who come up through Sundance. Yeah. And they are forever Sundance directors, mm-hmm. you know? And no matter how much money you throw at them, they still make, like, Sundance-style films. Yeah. And I think now what these franchises are giving the chance to show that, like, not everyone who comes up through Sundance necessarily wants to make their career working in Sundance films.
But it takes that Sundance film to get you to, like, you know, the guy that's doing Spider-Man did Cop Car.
Yeah.
Like, maybe not a Sundance film, but that's still something that falls in that same category.
Well, I mean, even Mark Webb with the last Spider-Man, he did 500 Days of Summer was the movie he did right before Spider-Man. I mean,
I think he just got cast because of his name.
Mark Webb?
Yeah, I think so, too.
That's why. I mean, and even you can even go as far back as Fincher, is that, and I'll bring it up, but like Fincher was just doing music videos, and then he gets the chance to do Alien 3.
Well, I mean, that's a whole it other is. Episode is like coming up through music videos as,
in the '90s. Yes,
dude, look at the guy who did 10 Cloverfield Lane. He did commercials.
Yeah,
he did a fan film about Portal, and then he did 10 Cloverfield Lane. Okay.
Yeah,
that dude is the true epitome of like a success story.
And then his movie makes money, and then he'll end up getting like a big, he'll end up getting a bigger film after that.
Yeah.
But even interesting part nowadays, and this last thing that we'll say is like you don't even like with David Lowery with Ain't Them Body Saints, his movie didn't even make money, and then he gets Pete's Dragon after that. Like his
yeah, because that's like we said, you know, you look for the people who are making things you're interested in their voices. Yeah. I haven't looked at the numbers, but I wouldn't say Super.
Yeah, you know, made a lot of.
I don't think Super made that much.
Yeah, and so it's, I think it is good for the industry that we are looking for unique voices, and also what slowly certain people are doing with Marvel. And you can even argue DC to some extent with Wonder Woman is that we're trying to add more diversity to these larger films.
You just have to go into it knowing if you're a director out there, you just have to go into it knowing that they can trank you.
They can trank you.
You got tranked.
So yeah, so we'll wrap it up here, and so I'm gonna let you guys do some recommendations. Thomas, I'll let you go first.
Ooh, okay. Recommendations. Pass me. I hadn't thought yet.
Okay, so two recommendations. First things first. Pleasantly surprised by the season 2 premiere of Fear of the Walking Dead on AMC last week. Season 1 had, I thought, was a really good story. You know, it's hard living in the shadow of this giant, you know, global phenomenon. Of The Walking Dead, of its sister show, I guess some other show. But,
yeah,
man, season 2, really interesting take, very, very different from the flagship show. And just a very, like, man, the beginning of that episode, of the premiere, very mm-hmm. profound. You can tell really quickly that they're really going to do something special this mm-hmm. season. And I really, you know, I'm going to be along for the ride, and it would be awesome if everyone else was too. And then second, today I saw a lot of people talking about a film called Echo Park, which is a day and date release on Netflix. It looks really good. I'm probably going to watch it later tonight. And just judging off of what I've seen already, looks like a great film. It's directed by a female director.
Amanda Marsalis.
Yeah, and I'm interested to see what this is. I'm going to watch it after we're done recording. So, yeah.
Okay, cool.
All right.
Thomas?
I got mine. New season of Archer. Totally changed it up again. And this is something I love about Archer, is that their numbers stay consistent, their ratings stay consistent, mm-hmm. and yet they push themselves to like find new things to do every season. Mm-hmm. Like they did Archer Vice, where, you know, they did 3 seasons of We're a Spy Agency. And then they just got tired of the joke, and they switched it to everyone being drug dealers. And then they ran that for a season, and now they've switched to being private investigators in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And they kicked the season off with a like J.K. Simmons cameo, which is always going to win me over immediately. and setting up like a Sunset Boulevard storyline for the full season arc. So. Yeah, you know, I'm getting more and more. I've always been a big fan of adult animation, but kind of looking at it more and more from a creative point of view, I'm really impressed with what they've done with this season and just as a series that they keep challenging themselves to do new things.
Cool. I will, because I just saw it last night and I enjoyed it. And if you are a fan of Dazed and Confused, I think you will too. I just saw Everybody Wants Some. Directed by Richard Linklater, that we talked about on this episode.
I've heard good things about it. From
I enjoyed it. It's a lot better than Boyhood.
It doesn't take much, Brandon.
I know.
I think it just, as I heard the reviews start coming in, I think that movie just suffers from a bad trailer. But then I started thinking about it. the first time I saw the Everybody Wants Some trailer, I was like, ugh. But then I started thinking about it, and I think I've never actually seen a trailer for Dazed and Confused, but I think it would be very hard to cut a trailer for Dazed and Confused.
Yeah, because it is very similar, and it's very much the Linklater thing of, like, there's not really, or his independent stuff, there's not really this overarching problem or conflict. It's just about these characters living.
It's a hangout movie.
They're just living, man.
L-I-V-I-N?
L-I-V-I-N, man.
Well, it works because it focuses on 3 days right before college starts up, and it also, instead of with Dazed and Confused of following just all these different characters, it does have that, but still we're following a central character. And it's entertaining, it's fun, great soundtrack. It's in limited release, so I don't know if it's not going to be in every town, I bet. It won't be playing in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, probably, I have a feeling. But if you're in L.A., it's probably in Atlanta. It's probably in New York. Oh, it is in New York. Yeah. So yeah, if you're in a place that has it, go watch it. Go watch Archer. Go watch what was the first thing you said, Hunter? Yeah, Echo Park.
And Fear the Walking Dead.
And they're on a boat, right? In Fear the Walking
Dead. Dude, okay, so they're on a boat, and you would think, okay, first off, it's got to be hard to shoot that show in Mexico on a boat. Like, just dealing with the international laws of just importing and exporting stuff. Production nightmare. Thomas will understand this more than anyone. Like, you know how hard it is to get a paper, like a thing of paper through customs? It's hard. Like, you gotta print call sheets, dude. You gotta, that is next to impossible. Like,
this is a different topic from a technical standpoint.
You have to just really applaud these people for just doing something bold and kind of crazy, but they really embrace it, and man, it really pays off, I think.
Well, nice. All right. Awesome. So, also, and we'll finish it off with, make sure you guys follow us on Twitter at @CineNationShow. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Medium. Hunter, do you want to plug Medium?
I'll plug Medium. Yeah, okay. We have this thing, medium.com. It's a shoot off from people who started Twitter back in the day. A bunch of them got together and made this. It's almost kind of like a personal blog, kind of like WordPress, but you can publish your articles in publications through Medium. And we have a publication on Medium called CineNation, the CineNation podcast publication. And I'm really proud of a lot of the stuff we've gotten on there lately. We've grown a lot on there. Some of you guys listening to this might have found us through there. If so, thank you for, following us on there and through the show. But yeah, it's just very, very special. It's a great tool that has helped us to grow, but also to really, kind of enrich ourselves with different filmmakers and people who want to, like, people that appreciate film and TV and some of the same stuff we talk about on the show. And like, we've just really, we've gained we've had a lot of important conversations through there, and I just, I can't talk highly enough about it. It's fantastic.
A lot of different point of views. And if you guys want to be a writer for Medium, it's very simple. Just join Medium and you can start writing stuff. And if it's during film and television, send it to us.
And we'll publish it, hands down. We'll
publish it. Like, as long as you don't have typos.
As long as you don't have typos, and as long as you don't ruin the DC universe, apparently.
Thank you guys for listening. Make sure you also subscribe on iTunes. Give us a rating. Give us a review. Help us out, because we want to make the show better for you guys. And hopefully we'll have more episodes for you soon. Some special episodes hopefully coming up. And so thank you guys for listening. Bye.